This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, good Friday to you. Thanks for joining us as we continue to roll along this morning. It'll be the Kansas City Chiefs to wrap up AFC West Week. Our good friend Alex Gold will be joining us this morning. We'll talk to him about the Chiefs, who have made five straight AFC championship appearances. They have gone to three Super Bowls under Patrick Mahomes. They've won two. They're the current Super Bowl champs, as we know. And they are starting to build something similar to what the Patriots had, although it's still a long way to go till you reach that level of dominating the NFL like the Patriots had for 20 years. But they are on their way because, again, you have to go through Kansas City to get to the Super Bowl. That's 5 years. That's a long time in the NFL with the ever-changing flux of this league. Five straight AFC title games at Arrowhead Stadium is an amazing accomplishment. So we'll talk to him about that. That is coming up in this hour, Alex Gold in Kansas City. I did something last night that I normally don't do, and I watched a preseason football game. I watch a little bit of them. I don't really watch them like I watch a regular season game, of course, but I don't even watch them in the way that I watch like a regular season NBA game that may not have great implications, even though it does count in the standings. The Steelers were playing the Atlanta Falcons last night, and I just found myself looking around like, I knew that game was on, and I said, I'll watch. And the Steelers looked really good. Kenny Pickett has had a fantastic preseason, just statistically. Hasn't thrown an interception. I think he's like 13 of 15 for like 200 yards, a couple of touchdowns. Hit George Pickens down the stretch.
He's 5 for 5.
Yeah, he was great.
Five drives, five touchdowns.
He's been fantastic. I don't know what to take out of it, though, because, again, you don't know what this means until you face a defense that is all the way through to the end of the game playing top, you're playing a top defense. And what I mean is that, Pinkett may be facing the Atlanta Falcons' first defense, right? You may be going starters against starters, but you're doing it for a very short amount of time. You're not doing it for the full game. You're not doing it for a game where there's going to be pictures sent down, there's going to be a conversation in halftime, there'll be an adjustment or two, there's the game wears on. As the game wears on, a little bit more exhaustion, a little bit more different circumstances pop up. And that's why these are really tough to make evaluations. You can always say, hey, a quarterback was 3 for 4 for 80 yards and a touchdown against the number one defense on the other side. So what? I can get that in week 2. Does that mean the player wins the game? Does that mean he scores on every possession? Does that mean he handles the third down and long situation in the third quarter like he did in the opening drive of a preseason game? No, it doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter at all. So even when you go up against top competition, even when you're going up against the very best the other team could put on the field for a very brief period of time, it is not for the full 60 minutes of a football game. It does mean, though, that as the Steelers go into this season, there is confidence in year two that Kenny Pickett is really starting to develop as a quarterback in the NFL. That he's really starting to get, like, he got really good late in the year for the Steelers in terms of protecting the football. He used to throw interceptions. He had 3 in 1 game. But he really got better at protecting the football. His interceptions dropped. Offensively, they weren't a juggernaut, though. Offensively, they didn't really explode. They didn't throw a lot of touchdown passes last season. In fact, Deontay Johnson had 0 for the whole season. So there is a promising feeling that Pickett has been good. The Steelers' offense has clicked when he is out there in this preseason, and that is at least one of the takeaways. But it is still very, very hard to evaluate a team during a preseason setting because you're not getting the full run. I do kind of miss the times where starters would play a full half. That used to be the third preseason game in the 4 preseason block that we used to have. Some teams would use their starters for almost a full half. And now, I don't know where this 3 preseason situation is for most teams. There's a conversation this weekend about Aaron Rodgers. He's going to make his preseason debut for the Jets. He hasn't been in a preseason game since 2018. He shouldn't have even been in that. I mean, it's a very risky move to play anybody in a preseason game, even a quarterback who is going to be in there very briefly and get in and out. You still never know what will happen. But in the end, I found myself watching this game and trying last night to do the fan scout thing. It only works for just a little bit. But I think there are situations where, you know, they do want to know what Bryce Young looks like at Carolina. I know Anthony Richardson last night played, he was like 6-for-17 for the Colts last night when they were taking on the Philadelphia Eagles in a Colts victory. Those are the kind of things you like to see, like where a rookie is developing and growing. Again, it's not currency for the regular season. Like, you can't really cash it in when they have a good preseason game, but at least gives you something. This is all going to come to an end this weekend. All of these games, all preseason games, are wrapped up, and then the 53-man rosters will be set. Everyone will be making their cuts. There'll be players available to go grab, and then the regular season starts on September 7th, which includes the team we're focusing on today, the Kansas City Chiefs, as they will open up on Thursday night, September 7th, against the Detroit Lions. So again, we got Alex Gold coming up this hour. So we talked yesterday about Shohei Ohtani and his injury to his he suffered a UCL tear, and he's not going to pitch for the rest of the season, although the Angels say he could bat the rest of the way, but they're kind of making him a day-to-day player. So you might get to see Shohei Ohtani bat in a game. You may see him see the Angels playing. You may not. It depends on the you know, sort of how he feels or how the Angels feel and what they want to do for him. And I was saying yesterday that if you're the Angels and you're in the running for the Shohei Ohtani's contract, this free agency, would you go to him and say, would you like to shut down? Would you like to be done? Would you like to go and exhaust your options and really look at it and just be in a place where you're not on the road with the team, where you're not worried getting into the lineup? You've got 44 home runs. You're going to run away with the MVP. There's not even close to the overall statistical performance that he has piled up already this year. Would you like to shut it down for the next 6 months? Talk to your agent, talk to your people, because we'd love to talk to you this winter, obviously, about re-signing you, and just do it that way. We're out of the playoff running. It's almost like a gift to you that we'd like to see, that, you know, you might think of us fondly when you're getting inundated. And you said something yesterday, Ron, that I thought was really interesting. You said, would he consider a one-year contract? And I was thinking about that yesterday. I don't think a one-year contract, but what about a two-year contract?
Yeah.
Right? What about a two-year contract? Now, that's not out of the realm of possibility. A one-year contract is a little risky because you don't have any guarantee on the back end. And if you really don't come back, then you lose the opportunity to get the $500 million right. as the two-way player. But the two-year contract is interesting.
Even at that point, like, you know, say he can't come back and he loses out on $300 million.
Right, right. Because I always think with baseball players, when they put their signature on that contract, all of that money is theirs. No matter what happens to them,
yeah.
all of that money is theirs.
Somehow, some way. It might be spread out over 75 years.
Right, right.
But you're going to get it.
But I was thinking yesterday, it's like, that's intriguing to me now, because now I'm thinking about this. If I'm his agent, what if I go with a two-year contract and I go, all right, I know he's 29 and I know he'd be 31 when this contract would be up. But what about the possibility of going to the Angels and saying, you know what? We're interested in talking to you about a two-year deal, because I don't want him rehabbing with anyone else than what he's familiar with. So I don't want to sign a deal with the Dodgers for less money than we want this offseason. And if you're the Angels, would you say, yeah, let's build up that goodwill? I don't know. It's just something I was thinking yesterday about what this free agency was going to mean. He's not going to get the $500 million by experts' accounts. I mean, obviously somebody could just go, screw it, I'm going to give him $500 million and hope for the best. But by all of the baseball analytics and the guys who do cover this stuff on a regular basis and how this business works, it's very unlikely that he'll get the whopping $500 to $600 million contract, because right now he's damaged goods. He's damaged goods. If you're his agent, do you go, you know what? I'll take the gamble on a 2-year rehab deal. I'll get him back to being that two-way player that warrants this kind of money. Now, we could easily make some solid dough in the 2 years. We think the Angels will give him $30+ million a year on these 2-year deals, right? And then I can add it to where we will fall short being an older player with possibly two Tommy John surgeries. The second one is not guaranteed. He may not opt for that. And then just go, well, we ended up getting what we wanted in the free agency of 2023, but it took a 2-year deal on top of another deal added together, and that's what we ended up getting. Because I don't want to be the agent that is going to have to convince teams that he's going to be the kind of pitcher that he was prior to this injury, if indeed he takes the Tommy John surgery and can't pitch next year. Because teams are going to come up to him and go, look, I don't want a designated hitter. I'm not going to give a designated hitter, no matter what you do at the plate. I'm not giving you $500 million. That's not happening. I'm going to give you $300 million as a hitter, but I am very interested in what that arm is going to be when you're done. And I'm really curious about what strategic thought the agent has on how do you rehab Shohei Ohtani and maximize this opportunity to be the highest paid baseball player in history. It's a really interesting situation, because if he just goes into free agency and goes, look, while we're looking for a 10-year deal, whatever that may be, it's not going to be the threshold people want. But it could be if you set in and go, look, it's going to take a year off from pitching, probably another year of really working his way coming back. Angels, can you give me a $75 million 2-year deal on this, and then we'll talk again in 2 years? That sounds like it possibly could happen. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Good Friday to you as we continue. By the way, I'm doing a high school football game tonight. I just got notification this morning that the game has been moved up an hour.
Moved back an hour, yep.
For heat.
Yeah.
It is a triple digits, and now we're getting an 8 o'clock kickoff time.
Now, I think our games are going to be right now, like, you know, my son's high school. He doesn't play football, but his high school, they're scheduled to play at 7, but they've already given out the warning, like, hey, be prepared. It could be 8 yeah. o'clock.
So I was I get an extra hour to, you know, get my stuff ready and get out there. But I also it means I get back later.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I crawl in at like midnight. So, yeah, but that's good. I mean, it's been blazing here.
Oh, it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal.
It's the kind of heat that you worry about, like things in your car, like melting. And so, I look at my car and I go, don't leave any pens around or anything. Like, I don't want ink exploding out of these pens.
Well, it's not only that.
Yeah, the car's like 125 degrees in there.
I remember
it's like an oven.
My wife and I went to the store recently, and then we were going to make one more quick stop. And I asked her, I said, are you sure we have milk in the car?
Yeah.
It was a legit question. It was like, because I remember when we lived in Arizona, you probably had the same thing when you lived in Vegas. A lot of people shopped at night.
Yeah.
They're like, night shopping was a big thing, which I never knew until I experienced the heat of the desert. And I was like, oh, this is why you shop at night, because your milk will go bad before you get home.
The heat dome is real.
Heat
dome is supposed to die down a little bit, though. But, I mean, it's...
I don't see when. I mean, yeah, I'm looking at our, like, 10-day forecast, 15-day forecast. I mean, you know, it's going to get down to 99. Thank you.
It doesn't make you want to do anything. That's the problem. Like yesterday afternoon when I was done with some stuff, I was like, I had to go meet the... I'm meeting my color commentator at a coffee shop, but it's like, a good 45 minutes away. And I didn't want to leave the house. I was like, I don't want to get in that car. I don't want to drive.
Yeah. like, our neighborhood's a ghost town.
100 degrees. Like, I don't want to go do anything.
I mean, are your neighbors the same way? There's no one outside.
There's nobody outside.
Nobody's outside.
It's, you know, you start seeing people walk at dusk, but it's nobody outside. So, nevertheless, be careful out there this weekend, everybody. I know there's a lot of high school games going on, and if you're living in this heat dome, be careful. Be careful.
Got that fear, right?
That's right.
There's that fear. You're going to hear that story of something terrible, and you're like,
you know what? I remember doing this a long time ago. I had a conversation. There was a push, and I want to say 2008, 2009. There was these stories that were popping up in like these rural communities, and it would be like 17-year-old dies from heat exhaustion and whatnot. And there was all this push to make sure that schools had cold tubs and defibrillator machines and whatnot. And they wanted to pass laws in like states that said this is what you had to have if you wanted to have a football program. And the opponents of that weren't saying it because they wanted, you know, they didn't care. They were saying, if you do that, you're going to kill football. Like, there's so many schools that can barely afford the padding that they have and the helmets. And not every school is out there playing in a 50,000, you know, seat stadium and have road jerseys and a different jersey and an alternate jersey. And some of these schools are barely scraping by, but they want to keep their football program alive, and they can't afford all of this stuff. And I started to wonder, could there be a way for some of these small schools, like just some sort of collective? Because that is my biggest worry with heat like this, is that you end up seeing kids passing out and they're not as hydrated as they should be. And I do get concerned because it's terrible out there. I mean, it can be. We start our season here in Nashville, and it's always hot, always hot. Cramps are a problem. By the time we end it, we're cold. We've gotten into December. I mean, November, you know, that's when the playoffs are. If you go deep in the playoffs, you're playing towards Thanksgiving. It's cold, and it's just a it's such a swing. We always talk about sitting in the box and we're wearing our jackets and during playoff time, remembering when we were losing 10 pounds during the season opener. It's really hard. It's really difficult. But anyway, be safe out there. If you got kids playing in sports, soccer, football, be safe out there. It's especially if you are living inside this heat dome. It's pretty bad. Nevertheless, I did watch that preseason game last night, and I did not watch the Colts-Eagles preseason game. I did not watch that, but I did watch the Steelers, and that was kind of fun. They scored a number of rushing touchdowns. Pickett looked great. That's all I care about. Go for it. Yesterday, we talked about the Denver Broncos. And we were talking about how there's been some bad luck hitting the wide receivers. Like Tim Patrick is out for the season for the second time with an injury that might end his career. He might get to a point where he's like, I can't keep doing this. KJ Hamler has left the team because of an injury. But they had two guys. They had two guys that were really going to be the focal point for Russell Wilson, and that was Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton. Now Jerry Jeudy is hurt. He was taken off the field yesterday. Yep. He was, this is unbelievable. This is the fifth wide receiver since the start of training camp that has been out of the lineup due to injury. As I mentioned, there's Tim Patrick. KJ Hamler, diagnosed with a heart ailment, is leaving the game for a bit. Jalen Virgil suffered a knee injury against the 49ers. You had Brandon Johnson. He's going to miss several weeks with a leg injury. And now you've got Jerry Jeudy. That's the primary guy for the Denver Broncos. He's going to be out a while after this injury. He's going to miss a few weeks. They open up the regular season against the Raiders. And he's going to be out a while at the beginning of the season. So you've just made Russell Wilson's life a lot more hard by having one of your primary wide receivers go down. It's unbelievable. Five wide receivers since the start of training camp. I mean, one is out again. Patrick is out with the torn Achilles. He's done. But KJ Hamler could return. He's getting medication for that heart ailment. He wants to come back. He has his desire to come back if the doctors will let him. They think that they can with the right treatment for this heart ailment. But again, Jalen Virgil, I think, is out for the season after that injury against the 49ers. He's on IR. Brandon Johnson is just going to miss a couple of weeks, and now Judy's going to miss a couple of weeks. Yikes. Yeah, man, this is what I've been talking about. This is the most nervous time for teams, the month of August, late July to the start of September.
So now the question becomes this. If the Broncos come off or start slow, the offense just isn't clicking, it's because Russell Wilson's weapons are gone.
Right, exactly.
Are we pointing the finger at Russell Wilson?
Well, that's what I was asking yesterday of Nate Kreckman. How many people in Denver see Russell Wilson and then see Nathaniel Hackett? And how much do they blame him? How much do they blame Hackett? Is it equal? Because I think there is a lot to be said of Nathaniel Hackett's inability to be a head coach. Clearly, he did not know how to be a head coach in the NFL. Clearly, the job overwhelmed him to a point where it affected the team. But if you're Russell Wilson, don't you have to shoulder some of this blame for missing open wide receivers, for not being consistent enough, not working through the problems, right? I wondered all year when Russell Wilson would spark. I was anticipating at any moment for him to get it, whatever getting it was, right? I expected at some point for him to go, all right, you know what? I am a quarterback that has led teams to 2 Super Bowls, even though the weapons I had and the defense I had were really good. I am a quarterback that has gone to Pro Bowls. I am a quarterback that won 12 games in Seattle with nobody. I can do this. I was expecting at some point for him to overcome the inability of his head coach to be a head coach, and it never happened. It didn't happen with a new coach after they fired Nathaniel Hackett. So I think a lot of it goes on him too, but I do think that, as we talked about yesterday, the hiring of Sean Payton is not getting a Super Bowl winning coach that was available, right? It was getting a guy who had done it before. They had gone too many times trying to make something out of nothing, right? Trying to, you know, Vic Fangio again was an okay decision given his time in the league, but even he just wasn't going to be as successful enough as a head coach. And same thing with Vance Joseph, same thing with Nathaniel Hackett. It's trying to find something where you don't have experience. Now they're getting experience. And even though you have a guy like Vic Fangio, who's 34 years in the league, has been in plenty of rooms. He knows how the game is played in terms of being a coach. He knows what that job entails. He couldn't do it. Nathaniel Hackett had zero respect after a while when we realized he couldn't do it, when they had to hire a special consultant to help him manage clocks and timeouts. I mean, it was ridiculous. But there is a point where Russell Wilson should have been good enough to overcome that. And you're right. I wonder, is his backers going to say, well, I know you were just down to Cortland Sutton by the time we got to the start of the season, right? But I wonder, how many supporters does he still have? Does he have any? I would be, if I was a Broncos fan, I would be just disheartened by the fact that I think my quarterback is way, way past his productivity.
Yeah.
I would be like, I think we just signed a guy to a mega cap crushing contract, and I think his best days are behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, because the drop off is quick.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Kansas City Chiefs, our preview today as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony.
Alex Gold is going to join us in 15 minutes. He's from 610 a.m. in Kansas City. We're talking about the Chiefs today. It is AFC West week. Next week, NFC East. And that'll wrap up our division a week, 8-week extravaganza leading to the NFL season. Kansas City, I'm going to preface this by saying that I am not one that looks at something so great that no comparison can ever be made to that greatness. I think if you take Michael Jordan, for example, it is okay to say, well, Kobe was on this trajectory like Michael, or LeBron was on. It doesn't mean there's a direct comparison. We tend to do this a lot with things that are just so spectacular that we say, are you comparing that person to this person? And I go, look, it's okay to compare stories. It's like I do that with I did that last year with Brock Purdy. I think it's okay to compare that Brock Purdy had a similar sort of feeling when Tom Brady came in to replace Drew Bledsoe. Many people didn't know who he was. Same thing with Brock Purdy, late draft pick, is he any good, etc. And then, like, as Brock Purdy was becoming a star, Brady was leading the Patriots to wins and wins, so much so that eventually they just went, nope, Drew Bledsoe's not getting the job back. Same thing would happen over there. So it's okay to make those kind of smaller comparisons. It is when you get into the larger straight up versus straight up comparison that I think people have a problem with it. So, for example, the Kansas City Chiefs have played in 5 straight AFC title games. They have been to 3 Super Bowls, winning 2 in this Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes era. Is it okay to compare this to the 20 years of Brady and Belichick? Well, no, because 20 years in the NFL is 2 lifetimes. I mean, it's incredible. You have to win in your late 30s. You have to win in your 40s to have a 20-year dominance in the NFL as a quarterback, right? Patrick Mahomes is not there yet. But it does not mean we can't say there is a blueprint that the Patriots have that the Kansas City Chiefs are working through. And hear me out on this, because this is a team that is centered around two people, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. Very similar to how 20 years in New England wasn't Tom Brady and this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy and Bill Belichick all for the 20 years. You can't do that in this league. You know, tight ends are retiring in their mid-30s. Offensive linemen are retiring in their early 30s. You have this ebb and flow to the roster. But if you can get your quarterback to play at a high level into his late 30s and early 40s, you're going to be dominant, especially if you pair that individual with the same head coach. And Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are starting to build that. Now, will it last? Who knows? But we're seeing the blueprint work in Kansas City. They lost Tyreek Hill. They traded Tyreek Hill last year. Didn't replace him with anybody. And Patrick Mahomes won the MVP. And he was doing, and get this,
and
it's not like they saw Tyreek Hill and his production decline. It's not like they knew a secret about Tyreek Hill that nobody else knew. And then the Dolphins got him and they were like, who is this? What did we just do? He's making to a megastar, and Patrick Mahomes is winning the MVP.
And when he's still winning Super Bowls.
That's right.
It's ridiculous.
Mecole Hardman is gone, right? Juju Smith-Schuster is gone. Doesn't matter. It won't matter. The only concern is, look, Travis Kelce is getting older, and tight ends really start to lose their productivity in their mid-30s. He's 34 now,
yeah.
A little bit. But if Travis Kelce starts showing his age even a little bit, he'll still be productive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I look at the tail end of Antonio Gates' career.
Right.
Now, he dealt with plantar fasciitis way too much. But he was still effective when they got inside the 10-yard line. That was his go-to.
Yeah.
And he was still effective. He was still able to, you know, out-jump anyone, box out, you know, utilize his basketball skills, which I pretty much look at tight ends as basketball players on a football field because they're usually so much bigger. Travis Kelce will still be effective.
Still be effective.
He may not be able to do those 60-yard runs right down the middle of the field that the Chargers seem to let him do all the time. You know,
the thing is that the Chiefs got these draft picks in the Miami deal. They went younger. They're getting a younger roster. As long as it's very, very similar to the Patriots.
So
the Patriots won with these guys, then they won with these guys, then they won with these guys, and yet the core of it was Belichick, Brady, and everything else was replaceable with other people that could elevate to where they were. If the Chiefs do this, they'll be around this thing 10 years from now.
All right, my question to you: do they need to win another Super Bowl? Or just, you know, make another Super Bowl for us to start hating them the way we hated the Patriots?
Yeah, and I wonder if that's coming.
Because I hate them for specific reasons. I now know how the Bills, the Jets, and the Dolphins felt year after year after year. Because I'm sitting there in the same division going, hey, we just can't beat these guys. I thought they were going to take a step back last year. I thought the Chargers were going to win the division because,
sure,
like, hey, you know what? You lost your guys, Mahomes. Good luck. And what's he do? He just goes out there, like you said, wins an MVP, wins a Super Bowl, wins a division. The number one seed. I mean, it's just, they didn't slow down 1 second. So I hate them because they're in division, but when does the rest of the country start to hate them?
Mahomes threw for over 5,000 yards with 41 touchdowns last year and did not have Tyreek Hill. He is that big in this league. And you're right. We do this all the time. We get a star. We love the story. We loved Brady's story.
Oh, my God.
Then after a while, we turn on him because that's what we do. We turn on the winners who constantly
draft
win.
Pick.
Right.
You can't help but love that.
Right. And the same thing with Mahomes. Mahomes is fun. He's exciting. When he came aboard, he was a breath of fresh air in an AFC that was tired of Brady. Right, was tired, even tired a little bit of Manning. Just sort of like we had Manning, we had Brady, we had Roethlisberger. We want something new, And this guy was new and fresh and exciting. I know when I was in Atlanta for the Super Bowl, his line, I mean, he hadn't won a Super Bowl yet. He hadn't been in a Super Bowl. The line for people to see him was stretched all the way through the convention center. It was...
No, because, I mean, we love his story, too.
Love his story. It was great.
You know, it was a reach for the Chiefs to go and grab him.
They got a C-plus, according to, I think, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, one of them. Got a C-plus in that draft.
I mean, you could have got him in second. Possibly you could have got him in the third round. He wasn't that good of a quarterback.
Big 12 quarterbacks, they don't work in the NFL. They throw all over the place in their conference, but they don't work in the NFL.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they entrusted the team to him. And as I've said many times, I mean, this was not a Kansas City Chiefs team that was terrible, right? Alex Smith was getting them into the playoffs.
Yeah.
So to make that decision for Patrick Mahomes, to have Patrick Mahomes in his rookie season play behind Smith, play one game. And then the second year they said, you know what? You're the guy. You're going to be the guy. And here's the deal. You have to take this and you have to continue what we're doing. You are not responsible for just getting us to the playoffs or just getting us a winning record in playoff contention.
That's the upsetting thing, too, is that there wasn't that 1-15 season that a rookie quarterback usually has.
Right.
Or a young quarterback usually has. Like, you're not supposed to go out of the gate and just win.
He was given the keys to a playoff team and said, go make this one step better. And the one step was they hosted an AFC title game against the Patriots and were very close to beating New England in that game to go to Super Bowl 53.
No, he repainted the house, and you're looking at it like, okay, well, that actually works.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have thought that paint color scheme, but that worked for me.
So, again, I'm not saying that what we're seeing here is equivalent to what New England did. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that there are a lot of elements here that are very similar to what the Patriots had success.
The blueprints look similar.
Look at the Seattle Seahawks. I'll give you an example. Look at the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle went to the Super Bowl, and they went to Super Bowl 48, and they played the Broncos. They annihilated the Broncos, and everyone was wondering, this is the new team. This is it. This is the team right here. Look at what they've just done. The next year, they went to the Super Bowl again, but they lost to New England when they made that decision at the goal line. But you could tell the writing was on the wall that things were going to start to come apart, that nobody thought a Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson connection was good enough to withstand all of the rest of the team leaving for better contracts, can't afford everybody, that kind of thing. The Patriots could do it with Brady when they would win and win and win. And then finally players had to leave because they were getting older. Players had to come in, players had to go, whatever it was. That core remained the same. Now, they didn't go to the Super Bowl every year, of course. You know, Manning and the Colts won a Super Bowl. Manning and the Broncos went to a Super Bowl. Roethlisberger went to 3 Super Bowls during that stretch, right? Joe Flacco won a Super Bowl. But for the most part, you had to go through New England. I mean, for the most part, almost every single season, you had to find where New England failed, right? Whether Brady got hurt at the beginning of the season and it was Matt Castle the rest of the way and they didn't make the playoffs, or you upset them in the postseason or somebody did for you. For example, the Steelers, when they went to Super Bowl 40, didn't play New England. In fact, the Steelers never beat New England in the playoffs en route to any Super Bowl that they went. They went to 3. But somebody took care of New England along the way. Right, somebody beat the Patriots along the way, whether it was the Denver Broncos. I think one year the Ravens beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You had the Titans beating them in the playoffs in the last game Brady played. What we're seeing, though, is a similar, like, look, we can afford to lose a Tyreek Hill because our quarterback will throw 41 touchdowns and win the MVP. We can afford to lose 2 other wide receivers. We've got younger wide receivers. Yes, Chris Jones on the defense, not happy with his contract and holding out, is a problem. All right, we'll get to Alex Gold, and he will ask him all about this coming up next as we continue previewing the Kansas City Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champions, on Sports Map Radio.
The call with Tony G and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, looking to hook up with Alex Gold, 6:10 a.m. in Kansas City on our Chiefs preview. We always talk to Alex. He's good. Great, great stuff on the Chiefs. That will be on our Progressive Insurance Hotline. For a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Mention, of course, the Chiefs defending Super Bowl champions. You've heard all of the praise of this team. There are going to be some concerns, right? I mean, look, You keep losing some players. You gain other players. Other players are going to step up. This Chris Jones situation has got to be resolved. So we'll talk to Alex Gold about that here on Sports Map Radio. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. Another football season. Good to be back on with you guys. And, yeah, I heard you mention the word, the name Chris Jones. That certainly has been the number one story for the last month or so. And I think everybody's surprised that we're still sitting here talking about Chris Jones not showing up.
Where do we stand with that? I mean, it is getting late, and where do we stand with that?
You're right, 13 days till the season. And, you know, I've said consistently here in town, I think Monday or Tuesday is kind of my deadline for him to show up if he wants to play week one. He's already at a point where you're talking about limited snaps, though. You know, even if he shows up, you're not getting full Chris Jones week one against the Lions. And so I think now that we're getting into possibly missing games, it's a whole different scenario. I just don't think it makes any sense for Chris Jones to miss a football game this year. There's the financial side, obviously, where you're losing over $1 million a game. And then if he misses significant time all the way up to week 7 or 8, like he claims he would do, at least on Twitter, then you're impacting your 2024 earnings as well.
Yeah.
You know, right now the Chiefs could tag him next year. Well, it would be a $31 million cap hit. So they're not going to tag him because that would be on the books right away. Well, if he ends up making $8 million less this year, all of a sudden you'll be able to tag him and either have him on your team next year, or you can drag out a tag and trade scenario. I would be calling the bluff if I'm Kansas City when it comes to him actually sitting out multiple games.
With so much attention on Patrick Mahomes' MVP season, especially without Tyreek Hill, give us an idea on the defensive side. It wasn't talked about a lot, but they were pretty good, especially Jones.
Well, no doubt. I mean, Jones was an all-pro. It was his best season in a Chiefs uniform. And that's the thing with even the negotiations right now. I don't think anybody thinks he's not deserving of a contract that makes him either the highest or right up against Aaron Donald as the highest paid defensive lineman and defensive tackle in football. I mean, he's a game changer. He, to me, is the second most important player on this team after Patrick Mahomes. And then that's when I would put Travis Kelce at 3. This defense right now, you know, they had a lot of young players that got experience a year ago. So there's the benefit of having so many young guys in the secondary and even a defensive lineman and George Karloftis who came on strong in the final 7 or 8 games or so. So they're young, they're athletic, and they have shown that they typically under Steve Spagnuolo get better as the season goes on. But just look at the current situation. Let me look at the first 2 or 3 weeks, and if Chris Jones somehow isn't there, Charles Minnehue, who they brought in from San Francisco, is suspended the first 6 games. The other defensive end is a first-round pick in Felix and Udike Uzama, who's probably going to have to split reps with a couple guys like Malik Herring and Turk Warren that most people haven't even heard of. And so there's some concern of how do they get pressure on the quarterback the early portion of the season if they don't have Chris Jones, if they don't have Charles Minnehue, and their starting corner outside of McDuffie is L'Jarius Sneed, who hasn't practiced in about 3.5 weeks. So there's concerns right now with the health slash availability of players on this defense.
Let's go back to this past season, and I always kind of been saying all the throughout these previews, sometimes we review to preview, but this was a team that people were going, all right, Tyreek Hill's not there. There's a vulnerability here. There might be an opening for the Chargers. There might be an opening for somebody else, and yet Patrick Mahomes gets an MVP season. He throws 41 touchdowns, and now people are starting to go, okay, how is he going to be able to do this without other wide receivers? Can you just keep replacing wide receivers? How does he do this? How does he make, what does he do to somebody that elevates them so that they can have a Super Bowl championship without one of the most dynamic offensive players in the game in Tyreek Hill?
Yeah, the only reason why they've been able to do it is because you have Travis Kelce. You know, if Travis Kelce wasn't part of the equation, then I think the questions about what the wide receiver room looks like and the experience and who's staying healthy and who has a chance to be a legit number one wide receiver is a much bigger problem. But as of right now, Travis Kelce is still a top tight end. He had 1,300 yards a season ago. Doesn't look like he has any signs right now of falling off from where he's been. The part where it gets scary is if he misses games or if Travis Kelce does have that drop-off. Then you start to wonder a little bit. So it's a lot of it is the relationship between Mahomes and Kelce. And then we know with Andy Reid, when you talk about getting creative, getting guys in space, finding the specific role for certain players, nobody's really better at doing that than Andy Reid. So as long as you have Andy, Mahomes, and Kelce, all three of those guys together, I don't think anybody's really all that concerned about the offense. I'm a little more optimistic than others about this year's wide receiver room, which has a lot of unknown pieces, but I think there's a lot of upside with multiple wide receivers. You know, you got Kadarius Toney, who question with him is can he stay healthy, but the Chiefs believe if he can, he's the number one wide receiver. You kind of know what Marquez Valdez-Scantling is. And then you start getting the guys like Sky Moore, who had a disappointing rookie year, Rashee Rice, a rookie out of SMU, who has looked really good here in training camp and preseason. And then a guy that I'm actually pretty high on, Richie James, who comes over from the Giants, who in his career has been basically like a 580-yard receiver, but he's been with Daniel Jones in a run-first offense. He's been with Kyle Shanahan in a run-first offense out in San Francisco. I actually think he has a chance to surprise some people and maybe be, you know, a 700-plus-yard receiver this year.
How much, I mean, Father Time can hit us at any moment. How much is that a concern with Kelce? 34. Tight ends don't usually play at like 36, 37.
It's wild. My co-host and I joke about this a lot because he is that, hey, he's just not going to fall off. Like, this has been going on. Him and I have had this conversation for 2 or 3 years, and I thought last year was the year where we would see him dip below 1,000 yards, and that obviously wasn't the case. So, I mean, I'm done with questioning whether or not he's going to be able to go forward with that. My only concern from last year was Travis Kelce did admit that he was more beat up than he ever had been in his career. Now, he didn't miss any games because he toughed it out and is able to stay on the field. But that's my only concern. I'm under the belief a little bit this year that they need their number two tight end, Noah Gray, to get a little bit more reps, a little more targets, ease some things off of Travis Kelce's plate a little bit to make sure that he's healthy for the and fresh for the home stretch and for the postseason. We'll see if they actually do that. But that is something that I think more than is he going to have a huge drop-off? No, but I want to make sure that he's not worn out by the time he gets to the postseason.
What is the feeling, though? What, I mean, when you talk about teams that are building these dynasties, there's always going to be a creeping concern. What is the conversation about any creeping concern about what's happening with the Chiefs?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now it's certainly how are they getting pressure on the quarterback, you know, on this defense. You know, to a certain extent, it's, you know, for camp early on, there was talk and through at least the Chiefs that, hey, they had a chance talent-wise to compete to be a top-10 defense, which if they did that, that'd be the best defense Patrick Mahomes has ever had. That's what's wild. Mahomes has never had any sort of defense the way Tom Brady had throughout his career. And so that's always been an amazing thing for him that he's been able to win a couple rings. But defenses that are either towards the bottom of the league or last year they were kind of middle of the pack. I think they were 16th or so in points per game allowed. So I think there's still some concern about if, you know, Chris Jones isn't available, where do you get your pressure on the quarterback? This team was second in sacks. And the other thing is what you asked me about with wide receivers. And I'm not as worried, but it's the question that some people have is, hey, who the heck can they rely on third down? It's not so much the yardage, but outside of Kelce, who's going to be the guy on a 3rd and 5 you need to move the sticks? And last year that became Juju Smith-Schuster. Who is it this year? Is it Tony? Is it Rice? Is it Sky Moore? And my answer to that has just been, you know, I think what's nice is they've got some depth. This is the deepest wide receiver room they've had, even if it's unproven guys. If it's not Tony, okay, then let's see, could it be Sky Moore? If it's not Sky Moore, then could it be Rashee Rice? If it's not Rashee Rice, can it be Richie James? I think they have more options, but the big mystery is really who's going to elevate and step up this year.
Alex, well, I got 60 seconds, but I did want to ask you your thoughts on Eric Bieniemy and what's going on in Washington, because you obviously know what how he ran in Kansas City. Is some of those players' concerns valid? What was your take on what people were saying about Bieniemy who are new to Bieniemy?
Right. I mean, that's who he is. I mean, he's a hard ass. I think it's pretty evident. If you ever watch a practice here in Kansas City or now in Washington, you can hear him from a mile away, and he's intense. He's old school. He's intense. But I think you did see the reaction from former players that, hey, look, he's intense, but it is going to make you better. And if I'm a Washington player where there hasn't been a whole lot of winning out there, yeah, I'm going to listen to this guy, and I'm going to let him help me progress my career forward. And, you know, the DB spot there is interesting because he's dealing with Sam Howell, who looked great in preseason. But that organization is just a weird spot. You know, Ron Rivera, if they only win 7 or 8 games, he's probably out the door. And so where does that leave Eric Bieniemy? Is he the coach in waiting, or is he on the street again? And then does he get an opportunity? I wonder what everybody expects from Eric Bieniemy this year. You know, if he gets Sam Howell to a 15th-rated offense, is that good enough? I think it is. That's pretty impressive if you have that with Sam Howell.
Alex, always good talking to you, my friend. We'll do it again throughout the season. I know we will. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, man.
You got it. Again, 6:10 a.m. in Kansas City. And one and only Alex Gold helping us with our Chiefs preview. Again, you're talking about a team when look, the Patriots went through this too. Every New England guy that covered the Patriots when they were winning Super Bowls, going to Super Bowls, would still go into every season because that's what you do. You don't think everything is great and everything you say, hey, look, yeah, we still have Brady. We still have these guys, but this is a problem or this is a concern. yep, wide receiver room might be a little thin, but nevertheless, you still got Reed and Mahomes. Defensively, he's got to get pressure on the quarterback, but yes. But he made a very good point about Tom Brady's defenses that he had while he was building up that dynasty. Mahomes has not had that like New England had in the early days.